What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It's never too early to learn that the government is a greedy piglet that suckles on a taxpayer's teat until they have sore, chapped nipples.
Guys, want any crack, by the way? You good? Anybody want some crack?
Yeah, can you like overnight that to me?
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. USPS, baby. We're using the system against the system.
I love it.
I think that would be a good, if you had to do one like hard drug, hard street drug for good for podcasting, I think crack would actually be like top three. It would have to be a good one.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
You want uppers, I mean, I guess for sure.
It depends what kind of pot, you're right. It depends what kind of podcast you're running, but crack is going to be a top three most of the time. I just did a podcast entirely on Delta 8 THC. I was flipping out. It was ridiculous. It felt like a key bump of coke. It was really interesting. Really powerful stuff. Yeah.
Is that isolate that it's like, I've heard about it new. It's like they basically like the same way they get CBD, like they take the one cannabinoid out of like regular weed. Okay.
Oh yeah. It's intense. The studies say that it's not as strong as Delta 9. The only study I saw that linked that was a rat study. So they have no idea what it does to human beings. So it's, to me, it's stronger than the Delta 9. And it's in such lower quantity. I don't know. But yeah. So I'm
did
still coming off
the
of
study
that.
On,
I did. This
on
is
New York
day
City
three.
Rats.
Yes.
Day
yeah,
three.
Right. This is day three of my Delta 8 experimentation. I bought three separate 500 milligram dosages. Today's day three. Just seeing what it does. I'm fraught. Mentally, I'm completely fried.
Oh, I see. I thought that was the objectivism that was frying your brain.
I can't believe that I did the reading on objectivism that I managed to do while my brain hurts like this, actually.
Could you imagine explaining like your experimentation and then reading Ayn Rand to Ayn Rand? She would be like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah,
she's smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. Look, we all have our vices, ma'am. Yeah.
Yeah. So we kind of, I wanted to pick your brain a little bit while we're talking about objectivism, because you are the philosopher of the millennial and digital age. You are the voice of reason and ethics.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
So, and you have a voice for radio, so it's perfect.
This is all things you said to me at Childeberg, where I was like, please stop. Don't say those things.
I drunkenly reminded him of it like five times.
Yeah, it was
a voice for radio. So, you have studied multiple philosophers more so than I think all of us combined, you know, with the segments you've done on Pete's show. And I happened to notice that objectivism was conveniently missing. So we just recently had a conversation with Dr. Stephen Hicks, who is a proponent of a lot of Ayn Rand's beliefs. So, and I know from what I've seen on social media that you and many other members of the in-group are against Ayn Rand and her philosophy of objectivism.
And Hicks. And I've on numerous occasions have been very against Stephen Hicks, but yeah.
So I will say that I find him to be a better voice of her philosophy than Yaron Brook. I think that Yaron Brook is, he's a fraud. He's scum.
From what I know, many of the objectivists who I know agree with you on that one.
Yeah. Well, he came out in support of the vaccine passports. He's like, well, if it's a private business, I don't see why they can't. And I was like, just a terrible representative of, I would say, so I'm going to give Ayn Rand credit and say that she is a excellent intro into the liberty movement. Now, I also know that some neocons, I know some neocons like Paul Ryan are fans of her work too, but there's always going to be outliers in every crowd. So I wanted to, let's start off with you giving your thoughts on objectivism, and then we can chime in from there.
So we could do, maybe I could frame it specifically towards Rand's philosophy, but you had said something there that I want to echo immediately, which is I and my objections to her don't focus at all on the political or economic theories that she presents. For two reasons. Number one, I think I came from Robert Nozick, who I'm going to be using a lot here. Robert Nozick's Anarchy, State, and Utopia is one of the most influential books for me to have read. And in that book, as well as in many other places, he attacks Rand on numerous occasions. But even he says, you know, I find myself agreeing with her political philosophy and economic philosophy. I just don't think there's any metaphysical basis to it, which is where I chose to not read Rand further. I did read Anthem. I did like Anthem. Short, sweet, to the point. I will probably never read Atlas Shrugged in the same way I will probably never read, what's the von Mises masterpiece that I'll never read? Oh, God, I'm forgetting.
Human Nation.
Yeah, I will never read that. I'll just never read it. It's a slog. I'll never read Das Kapital, things like that. It's just too big. But I liked Anthem when I read it, and I liked, if you can separate the ideology of selfishness thing, which I think is the hang up for most people, it's a hang up for me as well. I think the political theory that she presents is more or less fine. Then you have guys like we mentioned, Yarnbrook, Leonard Peikoff, who do very strange things with how that philosophy precedes itself after her death, including I think Peikoff has at least once suggested that it would be a good idea to nuke Iran. I know for a fact Yarnbrook has been on the bad side of the war in Iraq, as many other bad drawings he makes. And so I think from the basis of that, we can say that whatever Rand's philosophy is, it isn't as objective as she'd like it to be, or at least the way that people seem to push it forward after her death is much like how Marx thought that his philosophy was internally consistent. And then you instantly see after his death, they need to start organizing to figure out what the hell we do going forward. Then you have Lenin, Trotsky, you have the anarchists, and so Brickway. So it's, that's not to Rand's discredit. It's maybe to Rand's lack of clarity, but I don't know. I haven't read the largest of the books. I only know the criticisms, so I can't assert that. But my main issue with her is what I do know is, the basis, the axiomatic principles that she sets out to begin with, especially A is A, is one that I have a lot of problems with. I don't know if you want to get immediately into the metaphysics of this, because you did just ask for the brief introduction of it. But again, just to clarify, it's not the politics, it's not the economics, it's purely the metaphysics that I take issue with. And a lot of people have agreed with that, but have still appreciated the things that I'm not going to be focusing on here, the politics, the economics. That's fine, all well and good, and maybe one day I will pick up a book of hers and read it besides Anthem and figure out what I like in the politics. But I focus on philosophy, first principles, that at least that's what I like to focus on, rationality, and from the basis I find myself disagreeing with her.
That's a fair statement. Yeah, I would. I've told these guys on multiple occasions, I would read, if you do choose to go down that path, Atlas Shrugged, read it last. I think her other novels tell the story better and they're shorter.
Now, have you read a bulk of her writings?
I've read all of her novels.
Oh, great. Oh, this is good then. So you can stop me where I don't make sense. And
I'm a doofus and I started with Atlas Shrugged and I regretted it. I regretted it because there's a better order. It's like Star Wars, you know, you got to watch it in a certain order and it's better.
In the right way. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, I've read fascists and communists and postmodernists and all kinds of people. So I don't have any inherent disagreement with reading her at all. Although I know it's going to be a slog. So if she wrote academic papers, essays, things like that, I'm going to be much happier to read those than, like, I don't read fiction. I just got asked on a podcast. I don't know if it's out, so I'm just going to say on the Libertarian Institute. It's not Scott's show. On the Libertarian Institute, I just got asked on a podcast, and the guy asked me, and again, I'm only saying this because I don't know if he wants it public. Wasn't stated that way. He asked me what my top five books were, and it broke my brain instantly because I fall in and out of love with my favorite authors constantly. A guy who I liked last week, I think is an idiot today, and then in 2 months, I'll think he's genius again. Mm-hmm. So I am super detached. Like, I have things that I believe in, but I'm super detached from just spitting on an author because I don't like the way they think. I read a whole lot of people whose ways I don't like thinking, but I would just need something shorter to start.
Right, right. No, I get that. She did do some essays. I haven't dabbled as much into the essays. I started to, and then I heard Yaron Brook, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to stick with the novels. That's enough.
Yeah, right.
Like, well, this guy sucks.
It sounds like when you're talking about how you fall in and out of love with certain authors, that by itself is very anti-Randian, because the trademark trait of Randians is they follow her as a religious figure. Like, you have to accept her beliefs and her philosophy wholesale. Otherwise, none of it works, which is, I mean, like the definition of a religion.
You attack Rand, you attack rationality.
Yep.
Right. So the minute you attack Rand, you're being irrational. Or, I mean, that is not a charitable way to say it. But ultimately, someone hears you attack Rand, they don't go stop attacking that author. They go stop attacking the bulk of rationality that she revealed to us, which is it reminds me a lot of the scientific community. And that's why I don't really like the scientific community very much either. It's very easy. The Faucian way, of course, right, to go. It's not, hey, you're not attacking me, bro. I just wrote it. Okay. It's always been there. I just wrote it out. Now, again, that's not to Rand's discredit. She, like several other theorists who I do like, were absolutely notorious for building a cult of personality around themselves. I mean, everybody knows that. Her followers are very willing to defend her to all degrees. I think Alan Greenspan just a few years ago finally came out and said, you know what? There might be some flaws in Rand's philosophy, but for the bulk of his career, he was a Randian to the core. And again, not an issue to have vociferous followers, not an issue from her. Build up your brand as you will. In fact, it's one of the most admirable things about her is that she has such a powerful brand. I mean, what do they say? Atlas Shrugged is the second most selling book in America, right before the Bible, which is a little interesting. Kind of
it is interesting. That is interesting.
Two books there, considering she was a militant atheist and the Bible's number one, she's number two, not far behind. America can't seem to make up its mind sometimes. But I don't want to down. Here's my thing, and Tyler, I talked to you about this before. Whenever I do anything on Pete's show, when I did it on my show, and I'm going to do it on a few shows coming up because I like the format of it, when I summarize an author, My main thing is to not attack them at all, because right. I just know people don't like, just like me, people don't like to read. It's too long. It takes too long, and you have to read the sentences again. And sometimes some of these thinkers speak in such strange poetic ways that you have to read a book two or three times in order to get a base understanding of what they're trying to communicate. And so I don't want to muddy the waters too much as I'm presenting the concepts to begin with. Like, it's a little difficult to have an unbiased opinion about someone if you're going, all right, so Rand said this, and this is why I think she's wrong. Then she said this, and this is why I think she's... It's just not a good way to educate on the subject. So I'm going to admit here, this is not a Rand education episode, because if it was, then I probably wouldn't say anything about how I feel about her. But since this is what I think about Rand, and I think it's useful because it gives me a better picture of what I think about axiomatic principles generally. Let's start. Can I start with what her philosophy is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. This is from her words. I am primarily the creator of a new code of morality, which has so far been believed impossible. namely a morality not based on faith, not on arbitrary whim, not on emotion, not on arbitrary edict, mystical or social, but on reason. A morality that can be proved by means of logic, which can be demonstrated to be true and necessary. Now, may I define what morality is? Since man's mind is his basic means of survival, he has to hold to reason as an absolute, by which I mean that he has to hold to reason as his only guide to action, and that he must live by independent judgment of his own mind. That is the highest moral purpose. That is the achievement of his own happiness. That man must live as an end in himself and must follow his own rational self-interest. So the political conclusions that you get from stuff like that, obviously, is a micro-government, minimal government usually. Maybe she wouldn't have rejected the term because I believe it was Konkin who came up with the term, but probably very minarchistic.
Yeah.
No minimum wage laws, no public schools, no taxes.
Child labor.
The enforcement of contract child labor, which
she
is
didn't
a banger.
Any of that. Yeah.
Oh, well, she should have, because that's a banger. Get those kids working. It's better than school.
Hell yeah.
Economy, laissez-faire. Obviously, a rational individual doesn't try and organize a system of universal health care or, I mean, in the process. Because, again, remember, this is about seeking happiness and self-fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certain collectivist things that she does not really believe are rational behaviors, at least at their bases. But again, this is just the politics of it. Unsurprisingly, then, there's politics, businessmen, they admire Rand and her policy recommendations. But of course, very few of those same people are necessarily, nor do they have to be, which is a very interesting thing about principles in themselves, familiar with the analytical philosophy that she comes from. The basis, the metaphysics of it. They just hear the politics, the economics. And there's a really big disconnect between the impact of her political and economic thought as opposed to the metaphysics that she created, or rather innovated, off of Aristotle. The metaphysical underpinnings, obviously, are what are purported in her own writings to be the justifications for the political, social, economic views that she has, which is unfortunate because she does attempt to create a coherent system, and she does attempt to have higher order political views as a direct result from the foundations that she creates, the foundations of metaphysics and logic. And it's definitely, it's a problem because the a priori knowledge that you start with is the difference between who's allowed to eat, and who's allowed to be rich, and who's allowed to create what kind of art. And so there's a lot of implications based on the metaphysics, which she herself says, be a rational individual, make up your own mind, start from first principles. That's what she does. And you usually don't get people doing the very same action that she herself advocates. They just kind of listen to the later stuff and assume the earlier stuff holds. So there's two ways that you can approach objectivism, or at least her objectivism. The first one, and it rings very Hoppean to me, the first one is the political, which is that there are producers and looters, intelligent and parasitic. She does create a binary in society of those two things. The latter of those two things, the looters, they largely exist by force of numbers alone, and they are, to her, kind of the garbage of democracy. Like, really where the worst garbage of democracy comes from is in this looting tendency.
She exaggerates her characters too. Like when you read like The Fountainhead, for example, it's very clear who are the producers and who are the looters. Like,
right.
She makes it like it's painfully obvious to see.
And then hold on. So then the producers, are like cultivated Ubermensch. Ultimately,
yes,
the producers are the ones who ultimately triumph over the rest of society, ultimately help to build society to the grander stage. It's very capitalistic. It's very capitalistic. One way or another, it's that is the capitalistic tendency, the great man theory, few men trickling down on everybody else. You could see where all of the 1970s, 80s forms of Reaganite capitalism and Thatcherite capitalism really come into play. Anyway, there's more. A lot of the values in her work are found to be very persuasive. As I said, if you contest her or her beliefs to a person who really is a believer in her, you're attacking the whole of rationality and prizing collectivism over individualism, shrugging at excellence, probably through jealousy. I mean, we know about all of the things that she says about the various theorists who she attacks in her work, which I'll get to. So that's the first way, is that you have this great man theory overlaid by the an understanding that if you attack that, you attack the entire system of rationality, and therefore you are irrational, and by the internal logic of the system itself, you can be immediately dismissed. So there's a one difficult way of trying to get to objectivism, which is rebuffed. But this is, to me, the other way, the better way. The other way is to do it by going into the system of philosophy itself, which is completely materialist, absolutely godless, and totally rationalistic. It starts from three axioms, that of existence, identity, and consciousness, and it moves forward to create metaphysical, epistemological, ethical, moral views. I mean, there's a lot of, in my opinion, dubious inferences made, and the one that I want to talk about is the jump from existence to identity as a necessity, which I'll get to. But obviously, from any axiomatic base that you have to build on. Rand does this with existence. So the principle is that existence exists and therefore is characterized by identity, which is populated by conscious beings who have to use reason in order to survive as individuals. And therefore, the dictates of reason, what reason is built out of and tells us, forces us to admit that the rational self-interest that we have is the only metaphysically coherent way, and therefore implying that capitalism and free markets, economically, metaphysically, I mean, in all senses, ethically, are the only rational way forward. To deny that is to deny her main axiomatic principle that A is A. So we'll go to what people usually like to think about Rand, which is that she's incredibly conceited. I believe she calls Kant corrupt, Hegel nonsensical, and Wittgenstein garbage, which is my favorite of them. And she also described herself as the most creative thinker alive at the time when Hannah Arendt, Sartre, who I think is a rat fuck, but it doesn't matter, Camus, Adorno, Heidegger, Rawls, Karl Popper, Simone de Beauvoir, all those people were alive at the same time as her. She said she was the most creative thinker alive. So
she had fallouts with like Murray Rothbard. Who's the lady, right? Who's the lady who wrote, like, is it The God and the Machine or The Man, God and Machine? Isabella. She was considered like one of the founders of, like, the female founders of libertarianism. They, you know, they give her credit with Ayn Rand, but they had a falling out over faith, actually. Because Ayn Rand was so militantly atheist that she, once people wouldn't accept the fact that she believed God wasn't real, like, she just cut him off. That was it.
Yeah, she was very militant, but it goes with the theories. What I like about her is that she definitely demonstrates exactly what you should be like if you have strong axiomatic principles that you believe in, which is there could be absolutely no quarter or argument against them because they have to start from a mathematical basis. And there's mathematicians who've gone up against her. I couldn't even begin to tell you what their arguments are. I tried to look at mathematical arguments, not a chance. But in continuing to ad hom her until we get back to the point where I'm not going to ad hom her anymore, it is Greenspan, who in 1957 wrote, Alan Greenspan wrote about Atlas Shrugged. Atlas Shrugged is a celebration of life and happiness. Justice is unrelenting. Creative individuals and undeviating purpose and rationality achieve joy and fulfillment. Parasites who persistently avoid either purpose or reason perish as they should. That's Greenspan in 57. It's interesting to celebrate life that surrounds around the joy of perishing parasites. It almost seems totalitarian. Again, that's Greenspan, not Rand. And we know Greenspan...
Yeah.
Would many argue he was a totalitarian? Probably not. Pretty fair. It is interesting that such a theory was produced just a few years after the end of the Second World War. And again, I want to mention that Yaron Brooks has called for the war in Iraq. Leonard Peikoff called for the immediate end of terrorist states such as Iran, did not rule out use of nuclear weapons in that process. And again, Brooks later on had a very embarrassing moment where he had said mask mandates and vaccine passports are all good because of the situation that we're in today. They will maximize your personal freedom once they're put in, because at least you'll be able to leave the house. Very silly. But again, this is not Rand. This is just the people who've come after Rand. Now, I'm doing a lot of moralizing here, so, which is very leftist. So let me go to the right now. Instead, I'd like to attack the metaphysics of it. Or not me, but I'd like to highlight the attack on her metaphysics by someone much smarter than me, Robert Nozick. The interesting thing is the difference of opinions over the value of Rand's work are very stark, right? There's very few people who have a moderate opinion of her once they contact her. She's either a genius, a fraud, or she's the most important world historical intellectual ever, or she's a hack. There's very few in-betweens. The polarization is incredibly remarkable in that sense. And it is true that her opponents like to use that. They like to attack her from the media as a one act. I think it was Rothbard, actually, who created a play of some kind. It's called, yes, Mozart something. He created like some sort of a play, yes, or story about her to attack her, to disparage her. And even he ad homs the shit out of her in that, all about her egoism the entire time. Rand's proponents, obviously, those who are intellectuals, find those evasions, those attacks, not just to be attacks on her character, but they always use them as a confirmation that they hold a rationally acquired set of truths over the people attacking her. So, I mean, you see this a lot when people attack Rand. It's not just now I must defend Rand. It is your attack on her kind of proves what she's saying. Still an ad hom, still not very useful. However, there is one useful theorist who I'm very familiar with, who really kicked off next to Lysander Spooner, George Carlin, Penn Jillette, the earliest thinkers who I ever encountered of libertarianism. And Robert Nozick happens to be the most influential one. He created an article. It was called On the Randian Argument, where he proposed to examine the moral foundations of capitalism that were provided by her system. Everybody knows Robert Nozick is absolutely a pure capitalist. It's something that I've attacked him on ever since. I value the guy a lot. Pure capitalist, almost unthinkingly so. About as rationalistic as she is. But even he takes issues with it. From the very beginning of that article, he writes, quote, I would most like to set out the argument as a deductive argument and then examine the premises. Unfortunately, it is not clear to me exactly what the argument is. So he tries to assemble what he feels is a fair argument for her that he can then destroy. Because that's what he does. He does it with John Rawls. He does it with John Locke, an incredible number of thinkers. This is what Robert Nozick does in all of his writings, is debunk other thinkers who are close to him. That's probably why he wasn't well appreciated by people outside of the academy. His argument goes like, yeah, they sure did. Outside of the academy, he was hated. Inside of the academy, they tolerated him because he was the only right winger there. These are the four points that he comes up with, and you tell me if they're fair. The argument goes in four sets. Number one, only living beings have values with a point. Number two, therefore, life itself is a value to a living being which has it. Number three, life as a rational person is a value to the person whose life it is. And four, therefore, some principle about interpersonal behavior and rights and purposes. The gap, obviously, for Nozick comes between 2 and 4. Again, I'll read it one more time. This is him summarizing what he got out of her argument. Number one, only living beings have values with a point. Number two, therefore, life itself is a value to a living being which has it. Number three, therefore, life as a rational person is a value to the person whose life it is. And number four, therefore, some principle about interpersonal behavior and rights and purposes. He puts that in quote, meaning, therefore, she derives some set of principles about interpersonal behavior out of those first three. Now, he moves on with that argument and he examines the premise that life is necessarily a precondition for existence. This is what he says. One cannot reach the conclusion that life itself is a value merely by conjoining together many sentences containing the word value and life or alive, and by hoping that by some process of association and mixture, this connection will arise. The problem with Rand, Nozick says, does not consider that there are other value-forming concepts during the course of her transcendental argument, and that it has, she presents no means of ruling these things out. Again, cannot content be given to should statements by any of the vast number of other dimensions or possible goals? It is puzzling why it is claimed that only against a background in which life is assumed to be a value can should statements be given in a sense. And it is puzzling. Certainly there are alternatives to creating value, and it is not that these alternatives do not value life in themselves. Of course they do. It's just derivatively. Rand's claim is that valuing life has to be foundational. But apart from some intuitive appeal, she never really says why. In a footnote, Nozick concludes that Rand's attraction lays primarily in the way that it handles, that is, the philosophy, certain cases and the kinds of considerations that it brings to bear and its sense of life. He continues, for many, the first time that they encounter a libertarian view saying that a rational life with individual rights is possible and justified in the writings of Miss Rand, and they're finding such a view attractive and right, easily leads them to think that that particular argument of Miss Rand offers a view that is conclusive and adequate. And this is correct. Nozick himself, as I said, is sympathetic to some of the conclusions that Rand draws, but he himself finds himself unable to endorse the arguments presented for them. The moral case for capitalism flounders in a moray of unjustified assumptions, leaps of inference, and glosses over a tone with material certainty. Her metaphysics, in my opinion, don't fare better than that. And it's damning since the value theory is meant to follow directly from the basic axioms, identity, existence, and consciousness. It is Sidney Hook who calls it an abuse of identity, or A&A. Sidney Hook writes in 61, the extraordinary virtues Miss Rand finds in the law that A is A suggests that she is unaware that logical principles by themselves can only test consistency. They cannot establish truth. Swearing fidelity to Aristotle, Miss Rand claims to deduce not only matters of fact from logic, but with as little warrant, ethical rules and economic truths as well. As she understands them, the laws of logic license her in proclaiming that existence exists, which is very much like saying that the law of gravitation is heavy and the formula of sugar sweet. The problem, therefore, in a nutshell, is that logical principles are devoid of empirical content. One cannot derive particular facts from A is A any more than one can conjure a slice of pizza from the Pythagorean theorem. Tautologies are meant to be vacuous. That's the point of them. Certainly in public education, it is not a logical contradiction in the same way that a married bachelor exists or a four-sided triangle is. I mean, we're talking about things that move outside of the realm of theory into the empirical. She suggests that her metaphysics is meant to inform politics and society.
Dude, we went to Illinois public schools. Anything is possible.
Right. Exactly. Peikoff disparages all forms of non-Aristotelian logic as inherently dishonest. He says that they're an explicit rebellion against reason and reality, and therefore against man and values. But Nozick is completely clear on the logical issue. Rand, he says, is wrong. But not only that Rand uses strictly logical principles to derive ethical and political conclusions, which simply cannot happen, does not exist, impossible to do on its own, but the means by which she goes about the deduction that we should be so indulgent to permit, he says, is a strange wealth of confusion and error. He writes, the followers of Rand, for example, treat A is A not just as everything is identical to itself, but as a kind of statement about the essence of things and the limits of things. A is A, he says, and it can't be anything else. Once it's A today, it cannot change its spot tomorrow. Now, obviously, that doesn't follow, he writes. He writes, from the law of identity, nothing follows about limitations on change. The weather is identical to itself, but it's changing all the time. The use that's made by people of the Randian tradition on this principle of logic, that everything is identical to itself, to place limits on what future behavior of things can be or on the future nature of current things, is completely unjustified as I can see it. It's illegitimate, he calls it. And he goes on to cite John Galt in Atlas Shrugged, who's basically Rand's mouthpiece in the book. Rand, from what Nozick says. He says
he's
source,
the Ubermensch.
He is. In the book, he is the Ubermensch.
Yes.
He is the main character. He is the creator. The source of man's rights, Nozick writes, is not divine law or congressional law, but the law of identity. A is A and man is man. Rights are conditions of existence required by man's nature for his proper survival. That is John Galt who claims that. Nozick is exactly right in claiming that Rand leverages the principle of identity to all kinds of strange metaphysical purposes, including the very contentious and false conclusions about the essentialism within people. In Galt's speech, A is A is turned into a statement about the essential nature of humankind that carries with it the full logical weight of that axiom. And it doesn't work. If we suppose that A is A, for instance, and in particular, you know, I'm not a dialectical theorist at all. There's absolutely no physical theory that asserts that this is useful, and therefore I don't think a priori personally is very useful, but this is her statement. A is A implies absolutely nothing about man's nature, and not even that man has a nature or that it is fixed, and it can't be changed or consciously altered. If man has a nature, in Rand's sense, our rational aspects are a piece of our creative capacity, our imaginative self, and our empathetic abilities, our emotional landscape, our sexual drives, everything. To the extent that Rand's analysis of human nature as rational is meant to be descriptive of what we actually are, is totally false. But this is maybe not what she means. Maybe she means instead we have a logically deduced yet normative claim about, say, the rational, conscious apprehensiveness of independent reality that is central to man and his survival. That is the only value. And to that conclusion, I don't think it follows or can be justified by the principle of identity. But the last point, I think, is probably the most important, which is that apart from the details of her argument and the mysteries that her defenders attempt to get us arguing against, and the fact that the law of identity is applied to action and other interesting things, the most fundamental problem is the methodological assumption on the reflection of self-evident axioms and how they generate a host of inescapable political and economic truths. So in my preference, if I'm making an argument about how something should be, I would use case studies, available data, pragmatic, practical considerations, heuristic devices. And certainly I don't believe that the ends always justify the means. It's not elegant, but it works. It doesn't claim consistency, and no self-contained system can claim consistency. But that's the point of science, is to expand beyond itself. That is in contrast to the axiomatic a priori approach, which begins with all the possible self-evident truths that exist and then derives conclusions based on them. That is the inherent issue for me. What is difficult for me, finally, is to understand why we should believe that reasoning from so-called first principles can tell us anything about how to build a society or maintain one at all, as human society is messy, complex, social, economic, political, full of crises, outbursts of passion, and predictable irrationalities constantly.
Would you that it's safe to assume that a pure objectivist society would only function if there was a bunch of Ubermensches in it?
Oh, like, I wonder. Like, you've read more than me. Do you? Can she have Ubermensch working together?
And they do an Atlas Shrugged. There's a few of them. And what's funny is that all the chicks in her novels all bang all the Ubermensches. So, dude, Dagny Taggart gets dicked down by every Ubermensch male character in the book.
Who was the dude that she had an affair with? He was certainly not an Ubermensch. And if you look at the picture of that guy.
Well, so there you go. Ayn Rand was just following her self, rational self-interest. She was trying pursuing to get, happiness trying to get that as the dick. Ultimate goal.
Right.
Even if he was married, right. Nothing was right. Stopping her.
This is, to me, from what I understand, having read cursorily about this, is that Randian theory is the opposite of chemistry or a hard science. Because think about it this way. In science, you really where you begin, let's say, is chemistry, right?
Are we talking pre-2020 science or like today's
science? We're talking about real science. Yeah, we're talking about the useful,
not Fauci science.
Internally very inconsistent and entirely practical science, which is the good kind of science and not the weird religious kind of science. Yes. Chemistry just works because you test it until it does. So you have a baseline, which is barely knowable chemistry, right? And from there, you're supposed to do what? You go up to biology, and then you go up to psychology, and then you go to sociology and then political science, and then you go to economics. What Rand would have people believe is that the axiomatic method, the basis, chemistry, can tell us profound truths about the more complicated, higher order, nonlinear, complex systems that run the planet from logic alone. It would be like starting with math and ending with why you shouldn't, you know, kill dogs like randomly on the street, abuse them and destroy them and murder them. And it might sound absurd, but in the way that I look at things, there are different realms of knowledge, entirely different realms of knowledge that never make full contact, only ever overlap. It is this arborescent tree-like top-down or bottom-up, however you prefer the analogy to go, way of thinking, which does make the claim ultimately that logic, a thing that does not exist, that is not graspable, that is clearly results in different ways of approaching all of the later things we said, as all of Rand's devotees have very different opinions from one another, which they should not if it was mathematic. It makes the claim that you start with the math, you start with the logic, and then somehow you eventually get to child care and ways that you shouldn't have sex and her aesthetics, which are absolutely puzzling to me. I do know a little about her aesthetics. They're very puzzling to me. And by I do know a little, I could not restate any of it. I just was told about it by an objectivist once and my eyes glazed over and I was like, I don't know. I don't know. This is weird to me. This is strange.
So to kind of go full circle with this, and I don't know if you've ever been on any objectivist Reddit threads. I think you should give it a go.
I will do that. That sounds interesting.
I think you would get a kick out of it because here's the thing is I think that people and myself included have latched on to Ayn Rand's like economics and politics, which are pretty sound. I mean, you know, they're reasonable, but when it gets into the philosophy, it gets very muddy, just like all the critiques that you just said, where people are always asking questions like, well, how would this work in an objectivist, you know, society? And no one has a fucking answer. Like you'll get 10 different people saying that's not real objectivism. That's stupid. This is how it is. And you see a lot of that. And I think that what you just said ties it all up because she skips steps in the order of how she her thinking goes, which leads me to believe that what she did is she escaped the Soviet Union and she fucking hated communists so much that she went backwards.
She went backwards.
She didn't like lay a foundation. She just had a hatred of communists. So she did everything the exact opposite outside of atheism that she thought would oppose them.
Wow. I didn't consider her as a reactionary, but that it makes a lot of sense.
I consider her a reactionary. Like if you, so We the Living is very reactionary. Like the whole it's, I enjoyed it, but you got to like rant like her writing style. It's much shorter than the others. It's like 400 pages versus 1,000, but she makes it very known how shitty the Soviet system was.
Right.
And like, basically, you know, the premise is you'd rather be dead than live in the Soviet Union. So,
which is fair and true and a good analysis.
Cause I think she escaped during the Stalin years, I believe.
Yeah.
So she was living under a mobster rule.
Oh yeah. So, this is the challenging thing about her is, the things that I find the probably less objectionable are the things that most of the people who are critics of her find quite objectionable, which is her politics, economics, and so on and so forth. I hear them and I mean, I've gotten so into the Bitcoin thing that anybody can say whatever they'd like. I think Bitcoin is going to completely reorder society in ways we don't quite understand yet. So you can have your way of looking forward at society, but man, I don't know yet when we have this new epoch that we're entering. So I now look at most theories about when people say it's going to look like this in 100 years if we keep going the course. Have we ever gone the course? Is there a course? Even one course at all? I don't think there has been or ever will be. This is why I don't like dialectics in general.
Politics is reactionary, so we never have a straight course. I mean, unless you're in a monarchy where it's like a 100-year rule or something.
I mean, this is what's funny is it all goes back to Kant, who she absolutely hated. But it was Kant who asserted a transcendental principle that could step outside of itself, which is insane to me and has led to all the worst people from Hitler to Stalin, to every Marxist you can think of, fascist you can think of, neoliberal you can think of, all descent from Kant. This idea that there's a transcendental regular, a transcendental ideal, and that everything is a derivative of it. And that, from the very I could do an entire episode on this. I'm planning to do an entire episode on why Kant is pure evil. But it's funny that Kant was hated by, you know, some of my favorite theorists, and then Rand for completely different reasons. But ultimately, I think all the issues derive from him and his assertion that there is a transcendental principle that escapes from empirical observation, which I think leads to all of the absolute worst, most evil things you can think of. And so this goes very deep for me. Rand is, you know, when I look at Rand, I really don't look at her as much different than Marx in the sense that she was some sort of the most eternal optimist who I could ever imagine existing at all times, to believe that she could write down how things were going to go. She could say that human beings were inherently had the potential, some of them, to become Ubermenschen, which I think is also absolutely crazy. It's totally elitist, anti-populist, and it goes against kind of the sniff test for
me. That's why the Nazis love that theory, too.
I mean,
they love the Ubermensch.
They sure did. Everybody does. See, that's the thing. And what's really funny is, you know, Jordan Peterson is a what was very interesting about Jordan Peterson and his critique of the postmodernists. In his critique of the postmodernists, does not cite the postmodernists even once. I am not going to make this claim absolutely, but in reading Stephen Hicks's books, what is it called? Something Postmodernism, On Postmodernism, About Postmodernism. He writes a whole book about postmodernism, and in it, he barely cites any of the postmodernists who he's actually attacking. And that isn't to attack Hicks in that sense. It is to say that as descendants of Rand, there's already an assumption about transcendental principles and truths that I cannot allow to go forward. That everybody who you can think of, all the theorists, the philosophers that you can think of just about, elevated something to the position of God at one point or another. whether it be Rand doing it with the identity, the human, the self, whether it be Nietzsche doing it with the Ubermenschen, the last man, I believe is what he actually calls it, the last man, yeah. Whether it be the neoliberals who put neoliberal capitalism at the top of that and say, well, once we reach that, that's the end of history, or Marx, who says, well, once we get to communism, that's the end of history because there's a dialectical historical process that is higher than God. Materialism is higher than God. Therefore, that is the process that moves us forward. To Martin Heidegger, who says that experience, or rather knowing experience of a situation, ascends to the highest point of knowledge. And it's all just people replacing the transcendental principle that Kant puts up with some new widget, some new little thing. Now, there are a lot of theorists who I read who do the exact opposite of this and try and deconstruct the idea of a transcendental principle entirely. And what ends up happening is you get called an anti-rationalist, which I am, but you get that said in a pejorative instead of in, oh, really? Well, let's explore that. It's always said in a pejorative sense. I think ultimately my critique of Rand is very similar to the critique that I have of Marx, Hegel, everybody who you can think of is they're all optimists. They're all incredibly optimistic.
She's rolling in her grave that you're putting her in the same class as those gents.
Well, she comes from a tradition of thought. I mean, all of those guys came from the same tradition of thought. They all had to read Aristotle in college. Every single one of them had to read Aristotle in college and then go off of that. I mean, in fact, Hegel is a Platonist. I mean, he goes before Aristotle to the real core of it. And I put them all in the same place. They all believed there was an end of history coming. They all believed that there was some sort of a thing that happens, or a person who exists, or a godlike figure who comes down and ultimately snaps his fingers and boom, there it is. Now we're in the perfect society.
So, and you think that Bitcoin is going to transcend that?
No, I don't. At all. I think Bitcoin is, I'm very excited about Bitcoin, but I think it's ultimately is going to utterly change what it means to be human and therefore get rid of that A is A, man is man thing in the first place. I'm not optimistic about Bitcoin. I think there's some incredibly bad implications of it if you want to stay a human being as we understand it. But I think it's, number one, inevitable. Number two, looks like it was made by aliens, and so how can you not be fascinated by that? And number three, it's a reality, so it's coming. So we better start to understand it. In the same way, you know, really? Cody Wilson, remember Cody Wilson had said about the gun grabbers? This thing is already out there, and you guys need to adjust the way you look at the world now. We're not adjusting shit. It's just out there now. I believe that about Bitcoin. I believe that about net mesh networks. I would have believed that when the internet first came out, first hit, and people started to be able to use that at home. I think we are much more going out of the Aristotelian way of thinking, the actual way of thinking, the realist, in quotes, way of thinking, into the virtual, into the potential, into the very strange abyss where anything is possible. And we're going closer and closer to that every day. But that's not a transcendental principle. In fact, it eliminates any sense of certainty in a transcendental principle. It is totally imminent. I mean, if Bitcoin is infusing itself into the whole of society, for instance, Bitcoin's not at the top. It is society. Society's not at the top. Society is the process that exists where two people interact. That's not at the top. There's nothing that says anything about society in society. It's purely descriptive. It is the ascriptive people who say things like, well, this axiom works. This axiom will take us to this place in the future. I don't even know what I'm going to eat for dinner in 2 weeks. And there are people who believe that principles were founded 50,000 years ago about the way human society has to function. And yet weirdly acknowledge the entire time that we go, like people like Marx, go through different epochs and scenarios. But ultimately, I guess it's going to end up in a certain way that I can predict. It's just always been a strange way of thinking to me. And so in conclusion, put it all together, Rand fits into the same place as many other philosophers as me, which is more or less that I shrink away from any transcendental principles at all at the basis. And I find those things a lot easier to undermine and degrade than I do the political assertions that she makes based on that, because the political assertions she makes based on that are, most of them are happening right now. It's the way most people believe in things right now, in selfishness. That's just how things are right now. So those are not fine, but they exist, and so we should talk about them. But as far as how she created those things in her own head, I think what you said is it seems to make a lot more sense, Tyler, that she hated a thing first, she knew what the wrong thing was first, and built backwards. And if that's the case, it also stands to reason why the things at the very beginning of that, the politics, the economics, seem to make more sense than the actual metaphysics does. And probably why more people are appealed to that than the actual metaphysics.
Yeah, because that's what reeled me in, 100%. Like I said, I haven't really touched on, outside of a few YouTube videos, like real deep, in-depth observations of her philosophy. I just read the stories. I'm like, wow, these guys make a lot of money. They got some principles. These guys fuck. Literally, they fuck. They fuck all the chicks.
I hear they fuck, yeah.
Yes. And like all the chicks are also like Ubermensch style. Like they're like, they're bad bitches. You know,
yeah,
to use a very modern term, you know. They got the WAP.
The WAP, yeah, they certainly do. They certainly do. Yeah, it is interesting, man. I really now, after having done the research, want to go and read Rand Distilled. Just to get all of it in, put it all in, because I always find something useful out of every single person who I've read. And I know I will probably find useful things in there, especially if I just disagree with it, right? Then I can go, okay, at least I know the words and I can formulate my exact arguments as to what I think these words mean and why I don't like them. It's just good enough for me.
Yeah.
So we're coming up on time, and Bird, we've really dug into some deep kind of philosophical stuff. So if you can handle it, we're going to go even deeper. I've got some hard hitting sort of rapid fire questions for you that you're just going to answer the best you can. Okay.
Okay. All right.
So if you could fist fight one person from history, who would it be?
See, this is one of those questions that changes every week. You know what? If I could fist fight one person from history, I would want to fist fight Friedrich Nietzsche. Yeah, I would want to fist fight him.
Okay.
He was like 5'2" and a little prick, and it would be really funny to have him write about it, because you know he would.
Okay, would you rather go down on Maxine Waters or make out with Pete Buttigieg?
Oh, Pete Buttigieg all day. At least he's not bad looking.
All right, what is more likely, the complete official story of 9/11 or Flat Earth?
The complete official story of 9/11, and it hurts me to say that one. Wow.
Would you rather get stoned and make sandwiches with Robbie the Fire Bernstein, or have a night of partying with Hunter Biden?
Oh man. Well, I you know what? I got to chill with Robbie for a little while. We didn't eat sandwiches. I haven't had any chance to chill with Hunter Biden. I don't know if the pedophile stuff is real. I'm going to make sandwiches with Robbie Bernstein. That's safe, fun.
It's the safe bet.
Yeah.
Okay, if you went to high school with Anthony Fauci, would you rather give him a swirly, noogie, or wedgie?
Noogie. I'm very confident in my noogie abilities. Yeah, oh yeah, all day.
Okay, so now we're going to transition a little bit to the magic number game. You're familiar, I'm sure. Like, how much would you need to be paid to do X?
And I'm a cheap guy, so.
Okay. How much money would it take to be Nancy Pelosi's gigolo for a night?
One night? Oh, $2,000. Cheap.
Okay.
She'd feed you ice cream.
What's the magic number to kick your friend Pete Quinones in the balls and know you can't split the money with him or tell him why you did it?
Oh man, that would be a real betrayal of trust. $50,000.
That was my guess. I'm like, he's going to say 50 grand. So
what about to slap Aaron in the face?
$2.
Okay. Last one. How much to have your salad tossed by Chuck Schumer?
$0. It would be a treat. It would be a treat to stick my ass in that evil fuck's face. It would be an absolute
crying
treat.
Chuck.
Yeah,
see, you're banking out that you're banking on that it's like this mutually assured destruction. Like he's not going to enjoy it. Like he's also being forced.
No, he's not. He's not going to enjoy it. First of all, I'm out of his age range. That's problem one. Yeah. See, I deny the profit motive. First of all, to me, it's pure revenge. Pure revenge.
With the same would probably go for Cuomo. And what's the Kaiser Wilhelm? What's your mayor's name again?
Oh, Blasio, Billy de Blasio? Yeah.
Kaiser de Blasio.
Kaiser? Yeah, what is his name? Yeah, Wilhelm.
His name's like Wilhelm. Fucking...
It's like Wilhelm something. It's all German, pure German. What a move. What an asshole.
Yeah, and now you guys are going to get someone just as bad in Andrew Yang. He's going to be
Think so, man. I think we're going to get someone just as bad in a former police officer. I forget the guy's name right now, but hold on. The mayor of New York. What the hell is this guy's name? Oh, Jesus. I don't remember the guy's name, but there's a guy running who's going to be a real problem in the mayorship. Actually, all of the people are going to be real problems in the mayorship. Not one of them is fiscally responsible in any sense, but I don't care. I'm getting the fuck out of here. Whatever. I'll hopefully be out of here by around the time that vote is being taken in November.
Smart. Yeah. Hopefully. Smart.
Yeah.
Have you made up your mind, or are you still going back and forth?
I'm going whichever place puts a job in my hands first. If it's a virtual job, you'll see me in Florida. That's the plan.
Hell yeah.
Become the Florida man.
Dude, that's awesome. So there's a lot of good things going on there. You got the Emperor DeSantis. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Oh, he rose in his title. Now he's Emperor DeSantis. I like that.
Yeah. He's rocking it out down there. It seems like every day he's passing something to own the libs.
He is a pure lib owner. And what's great is that I've never once claimed to have principles, and I will continue to not have any principles at all. And so I am purely enjoying the owning of the libs, because for decades, the libs have owned everybody else. Everybody. Yeah. I'm not a conservative at all. I'm much closer to a Marxist than I am anything else. And the libs have owned everybody. Absolutely everybody. And so I'm happy to see somebody just saying, fuck you, fuck this awful regime that you've established under everybody's noses that's been working to brainwash people for decades now. And finally, hopefully, the reverse brainwashing is definitely what's going to occur. But now finally, hopefully, there's some light to be seen where there's actually a guy who's definitely running for president who's taken an official stance against critical race theory, a thing which, in its reality, I think is incredibly useful, but in the way that it's been interpreted by absolutely everybody after it, very much in the way we were talking about before, has been used as nothing other than a political tool to silence certain groups of people and prefer other groups of people. I mean, to the point where you have New York Times and there's 1611? I don't even remember what year it is. The 1619 project, which is, I mean, quite literally the perfect example of critical theory when it's taken over by neoliberals and used to perpetuate neoliberal narratives, neoliberal capitalism, and not actually do anything to deconstruct history itself, to try and prefer people who have been shafted in history. It's just kind of a way to perpetuate this weird class race war that like neoliberal upper halves really want everybody at the bottom to be having, so that they can't think critically about the system where all of that happened in the first place. I mean, everybody from neoliberals to fascists, to communists, to reactionaries would like you to believe that the media is the primary source of discontent. But it goes no further than that. Wait a minute. The media operates how? Money. The system that provides them with the money is how. It's always been the Marxist critique, the original one. But that got turned into neo-Marxism because they thought they couldn't attack money. So they had to start attacking institutions that manifest in certain places because of the money. I mean, that's ridiculous to me. As much as I believe in the cathedral, it's a second order effect of money. That's it. And so any distraction from that and money and power being equal, any distraction from that is absolutely useless to me in any political analysis at all. Which is why, if we can briefly, because I don't know too much about what is happening, but why in the age of Bitcoin protocol, and I'm going to call it Bitcoin protocol because the brand itself isn't as important as what the protocol in Bitcoin tries to get us to do, decentralization and so on and so forth, where we exist in a place where it is as easy as attaching to such a protocol that will dismantle as many systems of power as you can think, completely invert society into a populist mode of economics, which has never existed before. And certainly, if it has existed in the past, was easily dismantled and will not be dismantled as easily this time. I don't know why anybody is focusing on the bullshit going on in New Hampshire right now in the Libertarian Party. Who gives a shit? Who cares about politics or rhetoric or any of the things that people have been using for thousands of years to lie to you to convince you to get into the system that we're in today? Do you think anybody's individual particular rhetoric is going to do anything to get us out of the system that perpetuates the class race war and all the bullshit that we have coming up that neoliberals who control this government, the weirdo neoliberal fascists of China are trying to push on us, the weirdo authoritarians in Russia are trying to push on us? There's a class culture race war that I don't want to say is completely unimportant, but it is and always will be secondary to money. And that is what needs to be attacked. And it is being attacked by Bitcoin. It is being attacked not at, of course, the Marxists would say, well, hold on, money in itself is an absurd concept. Why do we have it? There's no basis to it. Whether or not that's true, I ain't ready for that one yet. What I'm ready for is to dismantle the current economic system, go into a new one, and then maybe we could talk about why we actually value money in the first place. We'll get to that. But like anybody who's talking culture war stuff, I've really moved away from in my belief that they're doing anything other than perpetuating the cycle. I mean, obviously, you could do more than one thing. If you're big on Bitcoin and you also want to use the LP as a platform in any sense at all, good on you. But man, there's a whole lot of people who are involved in that LP thing that haven't done an episode on Bitcoin. Interesting.
True. That's so, I mean, I'll never tell Rollo you said any of that because you're supposed to be opposed to him. But yes, Rollo's been saying that the entire time. Like,
yeah, Rollo is, and I hate to admit it, is a genius about this stuff. When he attached to this, it was like, oh man, I'm not going to be able to get him on this. He's too sure about himself.
And well, and the a lot of the LP people get really pissed off when he says that.
Yeah,
but it, yeah, but it, it's it once you want, yeah, because once you control the money, you control the game.
Right.
And can I just say one thing about the? Sorry, yes. Go ahead, Bird.
No, please, no, please.
Well, no, I was going to say what's kind of like, I'm just getting like LP and political fatigue right now with all of the infighting and the takeover and everything. It's like, if they successfully do it, like you said, that's great. That's awesome. More just, you know, good information and rhetoric coming out into the world is better than mundane blue pill libertarian rhetoric, you know, holding that
without a doubt
mantle. But it's become this thing where the world around us right now is changing at warp speed. Like we're at some sort of nexus where things are changing really quickly and people are, you know, they're spending 90% of their mental capital on this endeavor. And it's just, it's sort of predictable and it's just boring. And meanwhile, it's like everybody should be, you know, getting their lifeboats set up instead of trying to like steer the Titanic away from the iceberg. And yes. Yeah, like you said, you could do two things at once, but let's not confuse ourselves about which is more effective and important right now.
I think that is the maxi argument, right? The Bitcoin maximalist argument extended to all forms of political operation is you just go, well, if Bitcoin's the best at doing the dismantling, why are we focusing on a second thing and not putting all of our effort into the first thing? I think that's probably like a little bit hollow of a view because human beings really are capable of doing many things at the same time. And so I recommend if you got good ideas, I want to see you in as many places as you can be put. Guess what? I hate academia. I think academia is actually anti-freedom. But if you got ideas and you can work them in to academia, if you're like if you're a guy who is currently an academic, member of the Libertarian Party, Bitcoiner, and I don't know, a journalist too. Let's just throw all of the ways of communicating things to people as possible. I think that's awesome. Do it. Go for it. But, and I want to stress this, there's a lot of people who think the LP is the method in the same way that a lot of people think Bitcoin is the method. And I'm a lot sure that Bitcoin is the method, even though I think there are many possible, than I am sure that the LP is the method. I'm much more sure of Bitcoin than I am the LP. So it's a very, very easy wager for me which side I'm going to dedicate most of my time to at all, as far as communicating principles. And I think other people should start to do the same, because again, last time I'll say this, there's plenty of people who think that the LP is the primary way. And in parentheses, who haven't done a Bitcoin episode. That to me is the most damning and egregious part of it, is that there are people going, you could do multiple things at once. Well, motherfucker, are you? Are you doing multiple things at once? Because I don't see Bitcoin episode. I don't see mesh network episodes. I barely see 3D printing of guns episodes. For somebody who's super into decentralization, and I'm not talking about anyone in particular, what I'm doing right now is describing a number of people with really large platforms who need to be doing a lot more for the effort of communicating decentralization. And taking over a political party is the opposite of decentralization. Absolutely the opposite. What's going to happen, even if you take it over, the way a political party has to work is somebody's going to have to formulate a platform at the top. Everybody's going to have to bind themselves to that platform. The great thing about Bitcoin is it's a protocol, not a platform. So when you opt in, you by necessity agree to the rules of the game. With politics, everybody can say that they're in the LP to agree with the rules of the game, aka the platform. But first of all, the way they interpret those rules changes, and that's how you see people like Rand, Marx, everybody being derived and used in very strange ways that they probably would be rolling in their graves about. Same thing happens in any political system, where at the very top, you have a platform formulated, and then basically the guy who is most provocative, charismatic, and interesting at interpreting exactly what the words in that platform mean is the guy who calls the shots for the time. Bitcoin doesn't work that way. There's a protocol at the beginning. It's purely voluntarist. You don't have to participate in the system, but when you do, you have to do very little law abiding. The system is the law. It structures the way the system can be used. For a political platform, what structures the way the system can be used is pure rhetoric or lies or being convincing or any of a number of unreliable ways of communicating as opposed to code and protocol and process. So again, all of that hopefully explains why I've completely moved away from politics as anything other than a communication method for doing exactly this, telling people to get away from politics and move into protocol.
Well, and with politics, that's how you get a guy with no fucking hands as your president.
Yeah, who gets no pussy either, by the way.
Zero pussy.
And hasn't for decades. Is that what you want? I mean, we're talking about the Ubermensch here, right? Is that what do you want? Joe Biden at the top of it? A guy who, number one, no pussy at all. Number two, no hands at all. Number three, probably no brain at all. I don't know if you've seen him recently. He's falling apart rapidly. Oh,
did you guys see him today? Or was it yesterday?
Yeah.
We had the slip where he was saying he's reading questions and he goes, oh, I got my list of questions here. And as usual, I'm going to call on this reporter, blah, blah, blah. Like he said the thing he's not supposed to say. Like they gave him a script.
Who's going to throw me the softball?
Questions and answers from each reporter. He just said it. And everyone's like, let's pretend that didn't happen.
They were able to shoot him up with enough cocaine into his rectum so that he could get through two debates with Trump.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And then,
I said they had him on, like they had his nap time. They had his circadian rhythm set up in the basement. Yeah. So he had sun lamps and everything. And then they had like a designer cocktail of amphetamines that just like drugs. For the right 1 to 2 hour period, he was able to just kind of put my sentences together. And you're, I mean, I think that's
good. I like that one. That's a good impression of that guy. Yeah,
I do a few.
It's freakish. It's totally freakish. What the Manchurian Candidate or the Emperor with No Clothes? I don't know what. I don't remember what the references of the guy who's basically a giant meatbag that the neoliberal establishment, who controls the money, is simply using to perpetuate the exact same things Donald Trump was going to do, but in a more charismatic way. It's ridiculous.
They started building the wall again already.
Booyah, booyah! They did. I'm sure they fucking did. Sure they did, man. That's what they want. Is that remember, the wall is not to keep people out. It's to keep us in.
Fair.
Just remember that. That's all it's for.
Fact. Oh, man. Damn. We did.
I learned a lot.
Yeah.
This is great because I couldn't add much to this conversation. I was here to learn. Plus, I am in a medicated fog and my voice is gone from having a cold. So this was.
Did you shoot amphetamines up your ass?
And I'm high as shit. So
it's a great balance. We played off each other perfectly.
Perfect.
Well, cool. Anything else you guys want to touch on, or where are we at?
I'm good. Bird, you got any plugs?
Do I have to? Yeah, I guess I have to do this. With Timeline Earth, check that out. Search it on any podcatcher. I prefer Spotify. Nope, that's it. I don't do very much these days. I just have that podcast. I should probably do more.
Yeah, man. You should.
Hell yeah. I was told we were going to talk about meat. I guess we'll have to say that for another episode.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. I could talk about meat. So how many hours you got?
Your latest Into the Cave episode was, I listened to it when I was hungry, and you guys were talking about all this food. I was like, oh, fuck. So, yeah, we might have to come back. We can relate the philosophy of meat.
Oh, yeah. That would be very interesting. We'll do an episode about the philosophy of meat. Okay. I like that.
Now, are you like a barbecue guy or a smoker, or what's your favorite?
I'll tell you what, man, I'm not. I'm from New York. I know my limits when it comes to barbecue. That's not our thing. It won't be our thing. I mean, obviously, if we're going to, if any touch brisket, will be left to people who are better than me. In Texas, I had Texas style barbecue and it blew my mind. It was some of the best food that I've ever had in my entire life. And I've had a lot of good food. Now, there is a place in New York called Mighty Quinn's, which is a bunch of guys from Texas who moved up to New York to make more money. And they keep the tradition pretty similar. For me, I'm going to leave the barbecue to the experts. I like to cook meat on a cast iron. In fact, my first cast iron I got for Christmas, the most recent Christmas. And I have used it to cook every piece of meat I've made since. I'm completely addicted to it.
Hell yeah.
I think it's absolutely superior to any other form of cooking meat, probably except smoking and barbecuing and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I got a big old 20-inch cast iron skillet because I got a family of six. So I got to cook all my meals in that thing. And I even throw it on the grill sometimes. I got a big green egg.
Oh, yeah.
And I
beat that thing up. I have a nice cast iron, a large cast iron, and then I have like a cast iron griddle. Man, I beat the shit out of that thing. I clean it with soap every time I use it. I reseason it every time I use it. I beat the shit out of it. It's gonna be ruined within a few years, but it makes the best meat of all time.
Yeah, I actually got away from using soap. A friend of mine showed me like you can just kind of scrub it all off with like a brass or copper brush, and then
I have it. Yeah, for the real cast iron that I'm gonna pass down to my children, I have the steel wool and shit that you just use to scrape that motherfucker. But for the skillet one, I have no time for it. It's a purely utility. It's yeah, it's a complete mess. It's great. I have two sides of it.
Hell yeah. Yeah, we'll do a whole nother episode on that. That'll be great.
Hell yeah.
Food's one of my top five passions next to Liberty.
That might be my number one passion is food, actually.
I love food.
Probably.
And then girls who are bad for me is number two. And they usually go together.
Yes. Yeah, they do. So, awesome, yeah, I was telling my dad about the fat Konkan.
Oh, yeah?
I said, I couldn't rave enough about it because my dad's a foodie too. And I was like, it's a wild concoction, but it's so good. I think the next time I head down to Florida, because he's a Florida man too, so the next time I head down to Florida, we might have to make some fat Konkans.
Oh yeah, I have really crazy how that recipe I've gotten zero bad reviews about. I got a couple people who are like, I just don't like bananas, so they kind of abstained. Nobody was like, this is a bad combination of flavors.
It was which delicious. Well, I should have too.
Yeah.
I did eat two.
Awesome. Yeah,
should eat two.
Yeah, man. Well, I learned a lot, so I really appreciated that your insight on all the Randian philosophy. So
I learned a lot from doing that one.
So wait, Tyler, which one would you recommend first? Because I did buy a bunch of Rand books on Audible a while ago, and I forgot to listen to them.
I would start with Anthem. Anthem's short and sweet. And if you like Anthem, then go to We the Living, because that lays the foundation of her hatred for communism. And then go to The Fountainhead, then Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, Tyler's been selling me on it for like 3 years, and I always like, yeah, I'm gonna get into it, and it's
like the marijuana of libertarianism, you know? It's a gateway drug.
Okay.
Yeah, she and that all credit to her that she is absolutely a gateway drug into liberty. Absolutely, in general. I mean, you can't argue that at all. She absolutely is. Now, you know what they say, you got to learn language to be able to ruin language. You have to learn your principles first. You have to do stuff like that first. I get it. And then the only problem is, man, is deconstructing some of the very persuasive arguments that she makes to people, like to get them to the next step. Because I don't think you can even go to Hoppe directly from Rand. You have to immediately start deconstructing a lot, even to get to another right wing guy, let alone a postmodernist or a Marxist, whatever. Which we like on this podcast. speaking on the final thing, I like how the Libertarian Party New Hampshire Council, which basically was just disaffiliated or is being moved to be disaffiliated on Friday. I really like how they came out and they were like, unity is dead. We have to purge the party of all of our enemies. We cannot negotiate anymore. I like seeing a little bit of Leninist reasoning coming from.
I've been waiting for that for months.
Really interesting that my co-host is the one who innovated that idea. And I have no idea if their moves and the language that they're using has anything to do with that, but I sure like to think it does.
I hope so. I hope he becomes an unwanting cultural influencer.
Yeah, he would hate that so much.
He would, and that's why I want it.
He would hate it, but thrive in it.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So
cool. All right, man. All right, thanks, man. Again.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime, man. Appreciate it.
Squaw!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.